सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Welcome everyone and welcome to those who watch the class later online. Are you able to hear me okay at the back? Okay. Higher. I think I just had a coughing bout before I came out here, so my throat is a little irritated. कखलूनालङ्क्रियते कखलूनालङ्क्रियते दृष्टा दृष्टार्थसाधनपटीयान् दृष्टा दृष्टार्थसाधनपटीयान् अमुया कण्ठस्थितया अमुया कण्ठस्थितया प्रश्नोत्तररत्नमालिकया। कस्य न पापं जपतः तत् कः पूर्णः यः प्रजावान् स्यात् वान् स्यात् किं दुष्करं नराणां किं दुष्करं यन्मनसो निग्रहः सततम् यन्मनसो निग्रहः सततं को ब्रह्मचर्यवान् स्यात् यश्चास्खलितोर्ध्वरे तस्कः यश्चास्खलितोर्ध्वरे तस्कः का च परदेवता उक्ता का च परदेवता उक्ता चिच्छक्तिः चिच्छक्तिः को जगद्भर्ता को जगद्भर्ता सूर्यः सर्वेषां को जीवन हेतुः सर्वेषां को जीवन हेतुः जीवन जीवन हेतुः सपरिजन्यः सपरिजन्यः कोशूरः यो भीतत्राता यो भीतत्राता त्राता च कः सद्गुरुः सद्गुरुः को हि जगद्गुरुरुक्तः को हि जगद्गुरुरुक्तः शम्भुः शम्भुः ज्ञानं कुतः ज्ञानं कुतः शिवादेव। सो वी एंडेड इन दिस वर्स लास्ट टाइम हु इज द जगद्गुरु देयर इज समबडी गुरु इन इंडिया हु इज कॉल्ड जगद्गुरु राइट आई मीन अ लिटरल पर्सन सद्गुरु इज कॉल्ड जगद्गुरु वी विल हैव Kripalu, is he alive still, I guess? No, I'm thinking of somebody contemporary. We're not talking about that guru, that Jagat Guru, who may be calling himself or herself or students, disciples might call. But here, Jagat Guru we saw is Shambhu or Shiva, Lord Dakshinamurti, Shiva in the form of Dakshinamurti, who is considered to be the guru of all. And Jnanam Kutaha, where does knowledge come from? And the answer was Shivat Eva, from Ishvara alone. Any kind of knowledge, even though we might feel, oh, we worked hard for it, we have the brain power to learn, to get degrees, ultimately that knowledge, that capacity that we have comes from Ishvara only. Muktim labheta kasmat, muktim labheta kasmat, Mukunda bhaktehe, Mukunda bhaktehe, Mukunda hakkaha, Mukunda hakkaha, yastarayet avidyam, yastarayet avidyam. So first half, kasmat labhet muktim, labhet kasmat, kasmat labhet, from where or how is muktim, freedom, gotten, how is moksha gained? And the answer says, Mukunda bhaktehe. Bhaktehe, from devotion, to whom? To Mukunda. Mukunda, literally the dictionary meaning, da means to give. So the one, and you've heard of the word mukti or moksha, it comes from this dhatu, from this root. Mukunda literally means the giver of liberation. But it frequently refers to Krishna or a form of Vishnu. So what if you are a Shiva Bhakta or a Devi Bhakta? Does that mean you don't get moksha? You can never gain freedom? Here, Mukunda Bhakta refers to the devotion to Mukunda, the devotion to God, refers to not a blind faith, not a devotion in that sense to a particular deity or to a particular god of your choice, but rather it refers to the faith in the guru and the scriptures. The scriptures as explained to us by a guru. And why is that considered to be, why is it that we consider, why is the verse saying we get freedom from bhakti to Mukunda? Because that guru, through the scriptures, gives us the ultimate knowledge that can free us, which liberates us. So if knowledge is the only thing, and the guru is giving that knowledge, is the only thing that gives us moksha, what are we doing right now? Why do we do all the forms of sadhanas, like puja, meditation, chanting, listening to a class, or satsanga, or any kind of tapas? It's important to remember that all these practices are necessary, required, they are not optional, but they are insufficient of themselves, by themselves, to give that liberation, that knowledge. They cannot directly give us moksha, they cannot directly give freedom, but what they do is help, and you've heard this, they help us change our mindset. They help us change our attitude. Our attitude towards how we listen to these teachings. Not only, of course, doing puja or meditation helps us immediately, but over time, it helps us change our attitude. It prepares us. So that we can ultimately, through the teachings given by the guru from the shastras, we can ultimately come to recognize our true self. We can ultimately, and that's really what moksha is. So that identity of recognition of that identity, my identity with Mukunda, with that which gives me knowledge, with that which makes me free, that is why it's called Mukunda Bhakti. Moksha or mukti or freedom comes only through jnanam, only through knowledge. But that doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. All the practices we do are absolutely required. Unless you are a realized, quote-unquote, realized soul, unless you are mentally, you are so prepared, maybe through prior lives, you have some punya karma that you get born into this life, and you've seen child prodigies, right? Somebody who's a very small a child is a prodigy in math or music or an instrument or chess. So if you are born as a child prodigy, or if somebody is born as a child prodigy, with this inclination to spirituality, with this knowledge already, then for such a person, preparation is not required because they're already prepared. But I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure I'm not a child prodigy. Forget about spiritual life in anything. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of hard work, a lot of years and decades to come to the stage that you feel, okay, my mind is under my control. I am able to lead it. I am able to place my mind where it needs to be. I am able to, quote-unquote, control my emotion. I shouldn't say control my emotions, control my anger, or at least recognize when I am upset. So all these practices of puja, meditation, chanting, even chanting, you know, sometimes people, of course, chanting with meaning, knowing the meaning of what you're chanting is excellent. But sometimes just the act of chanting, even if you don't know the meaning, disciplines the mind, disciplines how you hear, how you can just stay focused with the chant, with whatever you're hearing, even though you may not understand the meaning completely. So all these practices are required but insufficient for gaining moksha. So this, in another way, we can take this Mukunda Bhakti, devotion to Mukunda, encompassing all these sadhanas, all these practices that we do, that will prepare us to get that final, that knowledge. And then the second half of the verse is asking, Kaha Mukunda? So who is Mukunda? And the text itself is describing, Yaha Tarayet Avidyam. Yaha Tarayet. The one who helps us, literally one who helps us cross over what? Avidya, or ignorance. So that Mukunda is that, or he, or whoever, or whatever, gives us the knowledge that frees us from suffering, frees us from our dependence on anything, anyone, for our happiness. And who is such a person to do that? The obvious answer is a guru, a genuine guru. So we just spoke about a little while back about Jagadguru. People call themselves Jagadguru, or the disciples might call themselves Jagadguru. A true or a genuine guru is called a Satguru. Satguru. And when you pronounce it in Sanskrit, due to Sandhi rules, it becomes Sadguru. And I remember a joke, you know, many times people in old, you know, in letter writing days, I don't think that's there anymore, people would begin a letter with the heading Krishnaya Namaha, Om Krishnaya Namaha, or Om Sadgurave Namaha. So the guru, when you write it in English, it becomes Sadguru, not Sadguru. So if you are writing to a guru and calling him or her a sad guru, obviously that's not the guru you want to be associated with. If you have not, and also obviously Sadguru doesn't refer to the Sadguru of Isha Foundation, who is called Sadguru. That's just a popular name. I don't know how he came about that name. But there are two, if you have not done so already, there is a wonderful video that our Swamiji has made several years back. I think it's called, Is a Guru Really Necessary? And Who is a True Guru? So in this video, he really explains very clearly how one comes about a guru, who is a genuine guru. If somebody calls themselves a guru, that's the first person you should run away from, because it's their agenda, right? You don't call yourself a guru. Your students need to call you a guru, or you know, you. That's also a little dangerous. So students, out of blind faith, can call somebody a guru, but that doesn't make him or her a guru. So how do you find a true guru, a genuine guru? And when I say a genuine guru, somebody who has studied the scriptures, not independently, but under the guidance of his or her guru. somebody who is well-versed in the scriptures, who is able to communicate it well. So many of you have your own stories. I'm presuming for most of us, our Swamiji is the guru. How did you come to know about Swamiji? How did you come to know about our Shabodha Center or about these teachings? And we all have our... It's very dear to us. If when you recognize this, how much... When you recognize the value that this knowledge can give you, the value of that freedom, the ultimate freedom you can get with this knowledge, we always think about the first time you met your guru or the first time you were exposed to these teachings. So each of us has our story, and for many of you it is, oh, so-and-so brought me, or I was just passing by and I saw, and that actually happened to me, not here, but back in India, I was passing by, saw a sign, Bhagavad Gita classes here. And that's how I got introduced to my first guru. Sometimes it's your spouse. You know, one partner comes and then the other one, with great reluctance after several years, is dragged into these teachings. But ultimately, it doesn't matter who brings you or how you came here. We have to recognize that whoever brought you or however you came here is because of tons of punya. Tons of punya, lifetimes of punya, of good karma that we've accumulated over lifetimes that brings us to a genuine guru from whom we can get these teachings. And you might have heard there's a verse in Viveka Chudamani which talks about the three most difficult things to get in life. The three things that are gotten only through Bhagavan's grace, only through a lot of punyam, only through Ishvara's grace. And that verse says, durlabham trayam eva etad deva anugraha hetukam. So etad trayam, these three, eva, are indeed or truly are durlabham, very difficult to get. What are they? And how do you get them? Deva anugraha hetukam. You get them, they're caused because of the anugraha, the grace of Ishvara, of God. And what are these three things? Manushyatvam, literally the state of being a human. So being born as a human requires a lot of punyam, requires a lot of grace. We could have been born as a mosquito in India and one squat and you're out, you know. A second thing that is difficult to get is mumukshutvam, the intense desire for moksha or liberation. So how many people born in this world have this desire to pursue spiritual teachings? I remember when I used to live across the development here, that they had a lot of Indians when the ashram had just started. And I would be here every class. But I never saw a single person from there come for these classes. Eventually, you know, I think some parents brought their children because we used to have children's classes and that's how they got engaged. So this mumukshutvam, this desire for gaining this knowledge is very difficult to get. Desire, we have so many desires, right? Are those difficult to get? The desire itself. So you have a desire to have a good house. You have a desire to raise a family. You have a desire to go on a vacation. How easy are those desires? They just come apne up, you know, automatically. You don't have to put any effort to get those, to have those desires. But this mumukshutvam is really comes from Ishvara's grace, deva anugraha. And the third one is mahapurusha samshrayaha. Samshraya, shelter or teachings or refuge in whom? Mahapurusha, a guru. A guru, Mukunda, the one who liberates, who can free us from our ignorance. So for all of us sitting in this room and for everybody watching the class remotely later, you've really hit the jackpot. You've got all three. We all have all three. We've got human life, got the desire to learn, and what better guru? Kacha vidya, kacha vidya, yat atmano spurtihi, yat atmano spurtihi. Kacha avidya, and what is avidya? Ignorance. Yat aspurtihi. That aspurti means to be manifest, aspurti, that non-manifestation. Non-manifestation of what? Atmanaha, of Atma. Atma, the self. This might seem controversial for those of you who've been listening to Vedanta for a while, because you've heard that Atma, consciousness, is always present. It is self-evident, always present. It is Sat, existing in all three periods of time, past, present, and future. So what does this verse mean by saying Atmanaha Aspurtihi, the non-manifestation of the self? So even though Atma is always present, is self-evident, it is not known by us. And that's what we are trying to, that's what we are trying to gain, that knowledge. We do not know Atma's nature as Sat, Chit, and Ananda, as existence, as consciousness, existence, as intelligence, as that Ananda, that happiness, limitlessness, and the knowledge that tells us that Sat, Chit, Ananda is not separate from me. So even though Atma is always present, it is not recognized, because of which we suffer. So this non-recognition of my essential nature as Sat, Chit, Ananda is called avidya. Kasyana shokaha, yasyat akrodaha, yasyat akrodaha, kim sukham tushtihi. Kasya na shoka, kasya, for whom, na shokaha, for whom is there no sorrow, who is not sorrowful. I am pretty sure there is no, at the psychological level, I don't think there's anyone in this world who doesn't have some kind of, it might not be intense sorrow, but there is some kind of a want, some kind of a difficulty, some kind of agitation. But here the answer is, says, yaha syat akrodaha, the one who is akrodaha, not angry. So one who has conquered anger. In the Mahabharata, there is a verse that talks about the relationship between anger and sorrow. So it might seem strange. Why is this verse saying, who does not have sorrow, the one who does not have anger? So in that verse, in the Mahabharata, it says, krodha mulo vinasho hi krodat dukkham pravartate. Vinashaha, the ruin or the destruction, krodha mulaha, has its mula, has its root in what? In krodham, in anger. Therefore, he, krodhat, from anger, dukkham pravartate, dukkham, sorrow arises, or sorrow is present. So it gives an answer. What do you do if anger comes, if sorrow arises from anger? Tasmat krodham visrujet, therefore, visrujet dhimanaha, dhimanaha, yaha ichet sukham atmanaha. Tasmat, therefore, yaha dhimanaha, the wise one, the enlightened one, ichet sukham atmanaha, the one who wishes happiness. And here Atmana does not mean Satchidananda literally. It just is a reflexive pronoun meaning for himself or herself. Visrajet, abandons or gives up. Gives up what? Krodham, anger. Okay, so let's all give up our anger right now. Not going to happen, right? How do you give up anger? So this, when the mind... So this verse is saying, why someone who is not subject to anger is not subject to sorrow. So what happens when you are angry? Our mind is agitated, our viveka, capacity to discern what is right and wrong, gets shaky, it gets clouded, it gets distorted. There is internal strife. You're angry, you might want to do the right, you are all dharmic people. You have that concept, but that anger comes in and distorts that viveka, that discernment. So how, and obviously it leads to doing adharmic activities, and that's not good for our spiritual growth. So how do we control, or quote-unquote control, or gain mastery over anger? And we're talking about your own anger, not somebody else's anger. So when somebody else is angry and you tell them, hey, don't be angry, what happens? They get more angry, and they probably will tell you, you know, you don't need to tell me, or use more harsh language, which I am not using in the class. So how do you control anger? There are several ways, practical ways to do that. One of the best ways is journaling or writing it down. So when you, at the moment of, when you're getting angry, you start writing everything that comes to your mind at that time. And you can include language that you would normally not use in the writing. So what happens when you do that, you are letting that anger, that journaling, or that writing is a means to letting that anger get out of your mind. You can write pages, depending on how angry you are. You can write pages. So it's always better to write it down than write it out rather than shout it out, right? Especially shouting at somebody else. So when you make this a daily practice, hopefully it's not going to be a daily practice. Hopefully you're not getting angry daily. But whenever you get angry, well, if you are getting angry daily, it can become a daily practice. But if you don't, if you get, you know, irritation is a little different. We all get irritated throughout the day at many things. But anger is a little different. It's a higher level. It becomes, anger is something that becomes so much that you don't have control over your actions. What you say, what you do physically can go beyond your control. So when you make this habit of journaling whenever you're angry, what happens, how it helps, is that over time, you'll see your own triggers that make you angry. You'll see patterns that come up in what make you angry, how you responded to that anger, whether you shouted or whatever you did. So over time, the idea is to grow out of this anger. The idea of this exercise is to come out of this anger. Is over time, and that time can vary for everybody, depending on your anger meter. You're like a thermometer. So you'll be able to see patterns and learn from that. So you'll be able to see triggers. You'll be able to see your own behavior. So that is one way. A second way is shouting when you're angry. So obviously, not shouting at anybody else. You go to an empty parking lot, or you go to the terrace. In this country, we don't have terrace building with terraces, but go to a veranda and shout out loud, or go to a mountain, you know, some remote place. Go to this trail at the back where nobody is around and shout. Shout as loudly as you want, as long as nobody is around, because if somebody is around, they'll wonder what's wrong with you. But you can shout it out, another way to get it out of your system. So you're not shouting it out at anybody. Nobody is around to hear it. Another way is having a pillow fight. And pillow fight, usually you're you know, there are two people hitting each other with a pillow. Here you can have a pillow fight, but only with the pillow, not with anybody else. So you can hit your pillow as much as you want. Hopefully the pillow is softer. The idea being you don't want to hit a wall. You don't want to hit somebody else when you're angry. And you want to, again, get that anger out of your system. So hitting a wall or hitting somebody else in a moment of anger is obviously himsa, and that is adharmic. So we want to come out of that. And then if you do all this diligently, I'm presuming we all get angry at times. Anybody doesn't get angry at all? It's not possible, right? Most of us, like I said, the levels of anger can be different for each of us. Our capacity to act correctly when that anger arises is very different. So, but if the anger continues to be a problem, and unfortunately for many people, if they don't have the tools, they've not learned how to manage the anger, you need to seek professional help, especially if you're hurting somebody, hurting yourself, or hurting people around you, people in your lives. There are many CBT techniques, cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, and group therapies that help manage. There's, I think, you have this 12-step program for alcoholism to fight, to overcome alcoholism. There are some step programs, I think it's like 8 or 9 step programs for anger management programs. So if you are dealing with uncontrolled anger, or you are the victim of somebody else's anger, telling them may or may not help change their behavior. Even telling them, go sign up for an anger management class, would not work. You really need to know the right way to get them the help and get you the help needed as well. So if you are in an abusive relationship and you're at the receiving end of somebody's anger, you can get therapy to learn how to handle that anger for yourself. Rather than, most times in families, one person shouts, the other person shouts louder. But there are ways to diffuse that anger that you can learn if you are at the receiving end of it. Kim sukham, and what is happiness? Tushtihi. Tushti means being satisfied or contented. And this contentment or satisfaction is very different, can be very different for different people. So for example, if somebody thinks their contentment will come when they get that dream job. So he or she gets his or her dream job, is overjoyed, at least for some time, till the problems at work start creeping up, at this new dream job come up, or till they get fired. And there's a joke I found, which, you know, one guy is, one of these cartoon jokes, it says, I finally landed my dream job as a professional pillow tester. Going back to that pillow hitting. The salary was amazing, and the benefits, I don't know if such a job exists, but if such a job exists, ideal one for somebody who has anger problems. Get this job. So he says, the salary was amazing, and the benefits were incredible, but I was fired only after 2 days. And why? It's really hard to maintain a professional reputation when you're constantly sleeping on the job. So the pillow, very comfortable. So for such a person, the dream job gives contentment until it no longer does. How about somebody wants to get married and finds his or her Miss Right? He or she is over the moon because you found this perfect person in your eyes. And how long does this last? Until the honeymoon, most likely. So you realize that Mr. Right or Miss Right, or what you projected as being married to this person is not going to give you contentment. Or somebody wants a babe, desperately wants a child, wants to have a child. They end up being pregnant, getting a child, ecstatic. You know, it's a whole new life. I'm not denying that these things in life, a good job, a good spouse, finding the right partner, having a baby if you want one, obviously these things give a lot of joy. But how long do they last? So somebody wants a child very badly, wait till the child turns to the terrible twos. Then it becomes a little difficult. So in the Yoga Sutras, santosha or happiness is defined as the steady state, inner state, that remains unswayed by the ups and downs of life. So it is not something that the santosha, tushtihi or santosha, being tushtaha, does not depend on any external factors. Being contented comes with the recognition of one's fullness, already present, inherent fullness as Atma, and recognizing that fullness, that Atma, is the source of all happiness, whether it's derived from outside or not. So how do you know? So the next question would be, how do I know? I think most of us know if we are happy or not, if we have the santosha or not. But how is the litmus test to know if you have this tushti, if you are happy? If you are comfortable by yourself, and when I say by yourself, without your phone, without your TV, without your computer, without any gadgets, any devices, without family, without friends, without anybody in the room with you, if you can just sit for a few minutes and see what happens to you. That's a great exercise. If you are not missing your gadget, you're not missing anybody, any person in your life, you're not missing your to-do list. And this is a great exercise I would suggest all of you try when you go back. Once a week, at least sit for a few minutes by yourself and see how contented you are or not. And if for most of us that can be just a few seconds, because the mind wants. So if you do not feel the lack of anything or anybody, then you have sukham, and that is tushtaha or tushtihi, santoshaha, contentment. Ko raja ranjana krita kascha shwa neecha sevako yasyat. So kaha raja, it just seems like an, I remember this text is not organized very well organized with reference to topics. Here, it's suddenly, we're talking about Raja. Actually, I take that back. So kaha Raja, who is a king? And the answer is Ranjana Krita. So Ranjana literally means to color, but here, and one of the meanings is also the one who pleases, who does the pleasing, Krita, who pleases who? The people in his or in his kingdom. A king is one who pleases those who depend on him in his kingdom. So how does this verse apply to us? I don't see any kings or queens in this crowd, and there might be some who want out there who want to be called kings or who call themselves kings, but we all can be kings and queens in our own way when we are able to see somebody else's hardship, when we are able to see somebody else's struggle and help them in whatever way is needed, whatever we can, to remove their suffering, to decrease their difficulty, and make them happy, a little bit more happy, at least momentarily, by our words, by our kind deeds, by our actions. So if we can make them a little less stressed, a little less anxious, then that's the connection to how this verse can apply to us. And cha kaha kaha cha shwa kaha cha, and what is shwa? Shwa comes means a dog. Who is a dog? Who is likened to a dog? The answer is yaha nicha sevakah syat. Yaha the one who is nicha sevakah, the one who has to serve. Sevakah, who has to do service to nicha, meaning to nicha literally means low, but here you can take it as to an undeserving person, to somebody who is adharmic. So why is doing service to somebody who is adharmic compared to being like a dog? Obviously not an insult to dogs or animal lovers out there, but this metaphor is usually used to show how dependence on somebody or something which is adharmic can derail us in our lives. So, and it's a rather stern metaphor. It's used in many texts to emphasize the importance of intellectual and moral independence. And why is that? So those who have dogs, or you've seen dogs, a dog serves his or her master and relies on the master for its commands. So the master will say, sit. Dog is overtraining, trained to sit. Go, eat, you know, whatever the commands are, stand, or shake your paw. You know, you see all these cute animal movies where they do all this. So a person who works for an adharmic person, somebody, a nicha person, has to do what he or she is quote-unquote commanded to do. So if somebody, they're bound. So if a person is working for somebody who has no values, they are bound to do what they are told. And in that process, they might be engaging in adharmic actions. Sometimes, unfortunately, we don't get a choice in who we work for, who we serve. And if you're in a job situation where your boss is a very adharmic person, you may or may not have a choice to find another job, to leave that group. Sometimes you don't, your family is depending on your job, you don't have a choice. Jobs are hard to come back. You have to work for such a person. But here it is, nicha seva kaha, meaning seva, meaning doing service or doing seva. Seva is a great, a wonderful karma, a wonderful duty that we all have to do, offering our service. But when you offer service, your seva, to a wrong person, an adharmic person, or even to an organization that is not following the rules of dharma, when you offer to such a person or an organization, you might want to think about what you're offering, who you're offering to. So when we do it blindly, when we offer our service blindly without thinking about who we are serving, we are like those dogs who are commanded to do whatever needs to be done. Komai Parameshaha Parameshaha Ka Indrajalayate Ka Indrajalayate Prapanchoyam Prapanchoyam. So with this verse and the next few verses, there is a major shift in topic. Most of the subject matter becomes very Vedantic. People argue, debate about whether this text was actually written by Shankaracharya. We attribute it to Shankaracharya, but there is such a difference in the subject matter that we've studied so far. mainly emphasizing dharma, but now it's talking about Vedanta. So kaha mayi, who is a mayi? Who mayi can literally means the one who wields maya, who is a great magician. And the answer is not magicians like we know in our life or heard of, like Houdini or David Copperfield, Christopher Blaine. But the answer is Parameshaha. Parama, the highest, Ishaha, the highest Ishwara, the highest God. So why is God compared to a magician? Why is this Parameshwara compared to a magician? So you've seen magic shows or a literal magic show in live or on TV. You know, these magicians always seem to be pulling out things from their sleeves. You know, they'll pull out a string of pigeons. I don't know, pigeons under the sleeve, usually pigeons from the hat, right? It can be anything. So from their sleeve, they're pulling out a string of roses or a string of scarves. Or from their hats, they're pulling out pigeons. So Ishwara, just like a magician, pulls these things out from himself or herself. Ishwara brings up this entire world, this entire jagat, produces this entire jagat, but not from a sleeve or a hat, but from himself. Ishwara, the whole universe is created as a manifestation of that Ishwara. So how this happens, obviously, is a very big topic, which we won't cover now. But it's important for us to know that because this whole world comes from Ishwara, whole world including you and me, comes from Ishwara, we are not separate from that cause. We are not separate from that Ishwara. And there's a verse in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which says this very clearly. It says, Mayam tu prakritim, vidyat mayinam tu maheshwaram. So vidyat, know, you should know, mayam, maya, to be prakritim, to be nature or made of matter, tu maheshwaram. But maheshwara, Ishwara, is the mayinam, the wielder of that maya. Tasya avayava bhutaihi tu vyaptam sarvamidam jagat. Sarvamidam jagat, this entire universe, is vyaptam, is pervaded or filled by what? Avayava. Avayava means parts or portions. Tasya, portions of what? Tasya bhutaihi, of his being, of the being of Ishwara. So Ishwara creates this world, is manifest in it as well. So this entire jagat comes from Ishwara, just like a few little doves and birds and scarves and roses come from that magician. And the second half of the verse, kaha indra jalayate. So who is or what is covered by Indra Jala, literally means covered by the net of Indra. And it's translated as, what is this divine magic or what is this illusion? And the answer is, ayam prapanchaha. So this world, this entire creation created by Ishwara is his magic. Why is it called magic? So if you just look around you, and now with the spring season, seasons changing, look at the number of trees, the variety of trees we have. Even within the same species of trees, if you look at two oak trees, how different they are. They are not exactly the same. Look at flowers that will soon be coming up. Look at people in your lives. There are no two people who are alike in physical appearance, in mental capacities, in whatever. So look at the variety we have. So So when I said people, I also meant the animal kingdom. Look at the variety that's right from a sub-microscopic viral particle to a gigantic orangutan or whatever big animal you can think of. So there is so much variety, so much beauty in this entire creation. Coming back to this Indrajala, kaha Indrajala ayate, who, what is covered, so this entire universe, there is a story of a king that kind of makes us realize that even though there is so much variety, so much differences in the external world, this creation, it is all still Maya. It is all still not as real. And the story goes by a king, very powerful king, who had conquered a lot, sat on his throne, and he was sudden sense of being futile. Maybe he hit midlife crisis at that time, so he's saying, you know, what my life is about. So he asks the sages in his court, if everything is under my command, I'm such a powerful person, why do I still feel so dissatisfied? Why am I feeling this? And the wandering sadhu enters the court and offers to show him the secret of the world. So he tells the king to sit down and close his eyes. And as the king closed his eyes, he suddenly found himself in a completely different life. In this life, he was a beggar in a very distant land. He was begging for his food. He loses his entire family to some pandemic that was going on there. Eventually, he was accused of a crime that he didn't even commit, and he was going to be sentenced to death. Executed. He was going to be sentenced to death. And just at that time, when the axe was coming down, he suddenly wakes up in his chair. And the king screams, and the king says, that was years of suffering. My whole life I saw in a flash. How is this possible? So that sadhu replies, you're sitting on the throne as a king for just a few seconds. Your entire life of the beggar was an Indrajala, a projection of your mind. If you can suffer a lifelong time of agony in just a few seconds that you closed your eyes because of this Indrajala, this illusion, why do you think your current life as a king on the throne is any more permanent or any more real than what you just experienced in that few seconds? So the lesson for us is, as long as we identify with the role we play in our lives, as long as we identify with the character, whether it's a wealthy king or a poor beggar, or a husband, a wife, a father, a mother, a child, a professional, a doctor, an engineer, whatever role we identify with, we are subject to that covering of Indrajala, this net of ignorance. You've heard Swamiji use the word veil of ignorance. So this veil of ignorance keeps us in that suffering mode, that lifetime of struggle. Okay, end with our prayers. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet, asatoma sadgamaya, tamasoma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amrutangamaya. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Thank you all for coming. See you next week.